Monday, Tuesday.
What happened there?
Taught and cold, you knew that.
When the music short circuits and you go to a Hyundai commercial, you know it's hot and cold. Good morning, I'm Tom. It was a little slippery this morning. A little bit of slip on the old driveway. But it was above freezing, that's why. And you know, the fun thing is, it gets up to, it was 37 when I left the house this morning. That's not thermal weather. I don't need to be highly insulated in this kind of weather. I'm ready to roll, man. I think it was Thursday. Yeah, I think it was Thursday. I had to run home. I had to get rid of the thermals. I had to get rid of the winter coat. I was going to die. It was so hot. God, what's that all about? But we're halfway. I was doing the numbers. We're halfway through the season. Halfway through winter. And, you know, the second half of winter is nothing. Well, having said that, it is going to get cold next week. But it's relative, not arctically. So, well, we'll get there. It's almost, like I say, it's almost over. So, let's see. No particular frame of reference here. Remember last week I was talking about insulation. And specifically, I what got me going down that road was the new product that's coming out of the state of Maine by a company called Timber HP. And they're making insulation products out of trees. So they have a insulation board that would be competitive, I guess, against foam insulation. They have a blown-in insulation you would put in your attic, which I believe is already on the market. And they have a bat to fit in where, say, rock wool or fiberglass or whatever fluffy insulation would go. And I'd gotten some information on it, and I checked last week to see if it was available, and it's not yet. But my friend Matt Mann from Weir Butler got me some samples. Timber HP they're not ready to sell the product, but they wanted to get it out in the hands of people and get some feedback. So I've got two bales. It is a full 6-inch thickness. So it'd be, in my case, I wanted to put it in between floor joists to insulate the, from the basement to the first floor. And they just want to know what, you know, people think of it, contractors, whoever gets their hands on it. So Matt was nice enough to get me two bales, which I got on Thursday, brought them home, and I like them. There's a couple of negatives, not negatives, a couple of potential issues, not big deal, but the I like the density a lot. This is a really dense product. It's denser than rock wool, certainly denser than fiberglass, and that's a good thing because fluffy insulations tend to have air movement through them. This is dense enough. I don't think, I'm sure air can pass through it because it still is kind of, not quite fluffy, but I think it's a very interesting product. Of course I have to open it up and just try it out. And it's impressive stuff. The, product I got was 16 inches made for 16 inch wide cavity. So that would be a 14 and a half inch opening, a 16 and a half inch on center floor joists in this case, or studs. And I went to put it in, and it's about maybe 3/8, maybe a shade wider than the cavity, which most insulations are. And I went to push it into the cavity, and it was kind of challenging because it is so dense, but it's just some technique, and it's a little bit dusty. It's not horribly dusty. It is not itchy. Let me underline I'm going to put this in bold letters, capital letters. It is not itchy. Now that trumps a lot of stuff for me. If there were a lot of negatives, which there aren't, the fact it's not itchy is a real big positive. So I went to put the first piece in, and I broke it, which is okay because I just put it back in. And I had a bunch of stuff that it doesn't matter if it got dusty, but I got to move it out of the way. So that's a weekend project to, and I've got two bales, which is not a tremendous amount of area, but I've got one area where the floors feel kind of cool. So we're going to try it out. It's perfect for that. It's enough to do the trial area and see how it is. And I have the perfect test subject. That is my dear wife, who is always cold. So it will be interesting to see. Now, I have to admit, the floors feel a little bit cool to me, even though the basement is insulated. So it will be fun to see how well this stuff performs. So I'll report back to you next week. Everything else, I'm really impressed. Oh, it smells good. Not that that's a big deal. But you have, you know, when you have a big nose, you smell everything. And it smells good. What can I say? It smells a little bit like spruce fir lumber to me. I don't know what they make it out. Maybe it's not spruce fir, but it smells like a nice native softwood. And what's better than that in the glorious state of Maine than a native softwood? So I'm dying to get the rest in, and we will get that done. I'll get that done probably tomorrow. I'm going to be on the road today after the show. So tomorrow I'll get it done. It won't take long. I mean, except I've got a lot of stuff hanging from the ceiling, so I've got to work around that. I might have to cut some. And I've got some very nice serrated knives that will trim it if I need to. So we'll see. But I will report back fully next week on the full experience. But for now, it looks good. And we're going to take a break. It's 8:15. It is hot and cold. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. The text line 601-207-4478. Stay with us. We'll be right back. It is hot and cold Saturday morning. Good morning again. I'm Tom. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text 601-207-4478. My dear wife shared with me, and she shouldn't have done this because that's why I'm playing this song. This song is stuck in her head all week, and it's driving her crazy. So of course, I have to play it on the radio. She's listening. I'm in trouble, man. I tell you what. And the two of us are singing the song because we know every damn word to a stupid song because we grew up with it. And how many of you out there are singing with that song, huh? That's what we do. And they say as you get old, you know, music fights off dementia. So I don't know if it's working. I'm trying. I'm trying really hard. Oh, my goodness. So I had a good friend was in a car accident this week. And it wasn't a small accident. It was a bad accident. And he's still with us. And I think he's going to be okay. But he got hurt. And he already had some health issues. A little bit older than me. He had some health issues. And he wasn't wearing a seatbelt. And the airbags did not deploy on the car. and he was in a Prius. And the question was put to me, you know, when I found out what happened. He said the airbag didn't go off. So I did a little research, and certain cars, the airbags do not go off if you don't have the seatbelt buckled. And Toyota products are one of them, which is another reason to wear your seatbelt. And I admit, I will hop in the car and go zipping away and not wear a seatbelt. And he got knocked around pretty good. And he's okay. I'm sure he's going to make it. I'm hoping there's no repercussions, but be advised. I don't think it matters if the seatbelt engages when the engages the airbag or not. You probably should wear your seatbelt. I know there's occasions where somebody says, "Yo, I didn't wear a seatbelt. I'm still alive. I would have been dead." Well, yeah, but I think the numbers bear witness to the fact. In his case, at least, it would have made a big difference for him. And he's still in the hospital. And this happened earlier in the week. So, you know, he might have walked away from it. It was a bad accident. I saw the car. I actually saw it going by in a tow truck. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. So, please, we need the audience. We don't need to lose any audience members. Wear your seatbelt. It's not that challenging to remember. It's just, I get in car with Maria or Peter, they say, put on your seatbelt. Oh, I don't have to put on my seatbelt. I'm the president. So, okay. I will do it. After that, I got religion this week. My buddy Kurt has an old house that I was looking at with him for energy issues, and I was there one day, I forget what for, and, I know, I was helping him with some door lock sets, and he had run off to get something, and I forgot my cell phone, and I had ridden with him, so I was kind of stuck there. So I went down in the basement to look around. This is an old main house, rock mortar basement walls, and, you know, if it's daytime, and you go down the basement, and you see daylight coming in through the basement walls, that's not a good thing. And I'm not talking about through windows. I'm talking about through actual holes. So, you know, we discussed, he was willing to get it spray foamed. I said, you know what? This house needs some work before you would get to that point. There's rewiring to do and stuff like that. There's sills, some floor joists. If I was doing it, I would replace. I said, I don't think you want to spray foam the base, and you don't want to spray foam at this time of year anyway. You can, but it gets more expensive because yet they have to use more product because the wall is so cold. So I said, look, you've got to take care of the holes. Let's get some cans of spray foam. So we shot price a little bit. He got 12 cans of spray foam. I said, get 12. That's probably what we're going to need. There are a lot of holes. And we did it this week in a nice sunny day, went down there, had a flashlight really just to see our way around in the basement. There was enough holes. It was really easy to find where we had to foam between the sill and holes in the rock mortar where it needs to be repointed. But we got to get those holes filled temporarily. Now, ideally it should be spray foam, but if there's holes in the building, you got to fill them. This is Maine in the wintertime or anywhere in the wintertime, anywhere, any time of year, holes in the building are not acceptable. Critters are going to come and go. Cold air is coming in. There was already some freeze-ups. Long story I won't get into, but there had been freeze-ups. I said, okay, let's do this. And so we used 6 cans of foam. He got half regular great stuff in the red can, and I said, get some of the big expanding stuff, you know, for big gaps, because we had some pretty sizable gaps. And we got done, and there's no more daylight. Now, is it tight enough? Absolutely not. But the gaping holes are gone, and we only use 6 cans of the 12, so that's okay. I'm going to come back next week, and we will look at it again and see if we missed anything or if the foam shrunk back after we applied it, and do a second go-round in the basement to make sure it's tight. You can't just, it doesn't matter if it's can foam or it's caulking, whatever, you need to go back and double check, because this stuff can, as it dries, it can caulking in particular, as it dries, it'll shrink a little bit. Can foam usually expands, not shrinks, but in cold weather, when you apply foam, it's what we call an exothermic reaction. It gives off heat. Well, if the surrounding surface is outside temperature, which it is in this case, it tends to suppress that reaction. So it may actually shrink back a little bit, open up some voids. So it's easy and cheap enough just to go back, take a second look. It took an hour. We were 1 hour. We had the whole basement. This was, oh gosh, 1,200 square foot basement. And there were a lot of holes. And you know, there have been fiberglass and rags stuffed in here or there. I didn't pay any attention to those other than where I could see daylight. The rest of it, again, there's, you know, old windows that have been blocked off. Ultimately, at some point, those should be replaced and sealed and then spray foamed. And really, the time to get a spray foam job done on a basement would be spring, summer, early autumn, not the dead of winter, not the the absolute middle of winter. But given the alternative of just letting cold air blow in, no. So we want to make sure that we have, we protect the water system. And that's my big concern, is that he's running heat. Let's not let the heat go outside. Let's stay inside. More likely the house will be more comfortable. The basement will be warmer. The water pipes are less likely to freeze. All a good thing. So we'll go back and double check that next week. The other big project, this has been a project now for maybe 2 months. I've been working on this with my friend Dick down in Connecticut, who is a gifted woodworker. He can make banjo necks. He can make banjos from soup to nuts. He sent me resonators, you know, the back part of the banjo this week, I needed a couple. And he sent them to me for some banjos that we've been working on. And I'm like, these look too nice for me to use. I mean, they're just really nice. So anyway, going back, I'm going to run out of time here. I'll have to take a break. But going back a couple years ago, I came across a thing where somebody made a banjo out of Corian. Corian is a countertop material, if you're familiar with it. I think it came out in the 70s, 80s. And it's like a stone. It's a synthetic stone, a lot of different patterns and stuff. You can get it with sparkles and all kinds of crazy stuff. But you can thermoform it. So it's like stone, but if you put it in an oven, you could tie it in a knot. You can do anything. So you could make a round banjo rim. So we have made now, I've lost count, if you're listening, Dick. We've made, between he and I think we made about 6 or 7. I've gotten some material from Bangor Laminates. Thank you very much, guys. They gave me some material to make the pots with, and it's come out really well. So I've got to take a break here. We'll take care of a little bit of business. When we come back, we might be talking with Mike Dow about pets, the Bangor Humane, and then we'll get back on the, we've got to get back on the banjo thing. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Okay, you know what? You know, I had to play that song. Did you, Mike?
Oh, I love that song, and that is the song that officially begins our annual Pause on Parade walk that we do in the fall, the biggest fundraiser of the year for Bangor Humane Society. That is the song that sends everybody off on their walk.
Well, that's a good one to get started. That'll make you, it puts a little bounce in your step. So we got Mike now as over from the big morning show, 104.7, next studio, not 10 feet from me, right? 8 feet, maybe 6 feet.
That's right.
But he's at Bangor Humane Society today, and we're going to talk a little bit about pets. And I got him up here on the computer, too. I got every animal available at Bangor Humane. So where do we start,
Mike?
Oh,
that's great. Well, I just I started walking the dogs as soon as I got here. And I just love these dogs, Tom. They are so sweet and just so affectionate and grateful, you know, to step outside and to, you know, to be able to take care of business in the snow. And, you know, that sounds like a really little thing, but to them, apparently it was a big deal because they made me feel like $1 million. And there's that recognition that I like, too, where, you know, I've been here regularly for a few weeks now, and I've gotten to know some of these animals, and I can sense that recognition. You know, they're when they see me and wag their tail, or I get them outside and they're being playful, and they remember me from last time, and things like that bode really well for the people that are eventually going to be taking these animals home.
Yeah.
Because they're just wonderful. They're waiting for the right person to come along. Hopefully they're listening to Hot and Cold right now, because I know last week we had some people listening who came in and adopted plot hounds.
Really? That's wonderful.
Ricky, Bubbles, and Julian found their home, and I understand that Hot and Cold played a big role in that.
Oh, man. That's wow, you made my day. You really did. I didn't know that until this moment, but those are cute dogs, too.
Sure, they sure are. Yeah. And whoever took them home, they're some lucky people. But let me tell you about some great ones that we have up for adoption right now, Tom.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Well, have you seen Darla?
Yes.
Darla is a hound mix, and you can see her on the website, bangorhumane.org. She is 6 years old. She is spayed. She should be the only dog in the house, but you know, dog friends outside, away from toys and treats, that might be a good thing for Darla.
Mm-hmm.
She is a typical hound. She does like to talk, but she also, she's a happy girl, and she likes positivity, and she likes affirmation, being, you know, you're a good girl, Darla. You're so pretty, Darla. And she just melts when she hears that.
Oh,
she needs a person with a patient heart. And she's going to be a wonderful family dog for you.
And excuse me, I'm just looking here. If you're a runner, Darla might be a good dog to run with, because she is a hound.
That's right. She has a lot of energy. She is six, but you know, she is a hound mix, and hounds, they typically do have a lot of energy. And Darla, I'm sure would love to go for a jog with you.
Yeah.
We also have Baggy, Tom, and Baggy is a three-year-old Great Pyrenees mix.
Yeah.
And here's some words from Baggy, right? Just picture Baggy saying this: I'm a big lady with a personality to match. Once we get to know each other, you'll see I'm a goofy girl with lots of love to give. And I think that that's a really key thing. And I think about this a lot, because when you come to an animal shelter and you come to the Bangor Humane Society, and if you go out and if you want, you know, walk by the dog kennels, what do dogs typically do in that situation? They bark, they jump up and down, and they're like saying, pay attention to me, look at me, I'm amazing, get me out of here.
Yeah.
And some people, I think, are kind of thrown off by that.
Yeah.
You know, well, do we want to adopt a dog that barks and jumps like that? But really, that's kind of what dogs do. I mean, they bark and...
Sure.
And sometimes they'll jump to try to get your attention, but when they're taken out of this shelter environment, which can be a little stressful on animals, and you get them in a home surrounded by a family, and they have a routine, and which dogs love a routine. Hmm. They're going to be completely different.
Sure.
And they're going to be, you know, calmer, typically quieter. So that's something to keep in mind, that the way that you see them when you're here, not indicative of how they're going to be in the home.
Well, if you or I were in that cage, and they're not that big cage, I think we'd be jumping up and down too after a day or so.
Absolutely.
If somebody comes in and they're looking at a baggie here, they have the opportunity, I believe, that they can put her on a leash and walk her outside to get a feel? Or is there a place you can socialize with that animal where it's not in the
kennel? Absolutely. Yeah, we have a private meeting room, and that is a great thing for families to be able to meet these dogs one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also a way, if you have existing pets, they're going to want you to bring your pets with you so they can watch how the new animal interacts with your pets.
Sure.
And that's a great way to do it. We have these private meeting rooms. And I heard that one of our dogs may actually be getting an upgrade in their environment. More on that. I better not say anything more about that. But I heard that we're about to do something very special for one of our residents.
Okay.
So I'm going to hold off on details on that until it happens.
All right. Okay.
How about kitties,
how
Tom?
About cats?
We have lots of beautiful kitties.
We got the cats. Cool cats.
Did you see that picture of Tornado?
Yes. Right.
Domestic
there.
Short hair. Tornado's 10 months old. She's a little girl. She weighs 5 pounds.
Yeah.
Oh, but she is going to melt your heart. You look in those eyes, and I spend a lot of time with the cats, especially in the afternoon,
mm-hmm.
and you look into Tornado's eyes, and I think she has the ability to hypnotize you, because she's just so beautiful.
Yeah.
She really is, and so friendly and loves to play. Gidget is another beautiful kitty, 10 months old.
Mm.
She weighs about 7 pounds. And you can see all of these animals at bangorhumane.org. Christina is waiting to be adopted, 5-year-old female, 7 pounds. And I know you're going to love the name on this one, Tom, Fist Bump. Fist Bump is 13 months old, a male, and he is waiting for his forever home. It's just a real sweet boy.
Okay, and we still have, I still have Boogie and Woogie.
Boogie and Woogie are still here.
Boy.
Yeah, they're quite the pair. And if you would like to see them, today would be a great opportunity to do it. We open at 12 noon today. We're open from noon until 6 every Saturday. Just something to keep in mind, though, that we're currently under winter hours temporarily, so we're closed on Sunday and we're closed on Monday.
Hmm.
That does not mean that no one is here, because there are always going to be people here tending to the animals.
Yeah.
But on Sunday and Monday, we'll be closed to adoption. And then after today, we'll reopen on Tuesday at 1 p.m. So come on in today, noon until 6. We have bunnies. You might have heard Cruella was adopted last weekend, Cruella the rabbit. Well, we've got more. We have 3 rabbits now, Buckley, Wexford, and Windsor. We have 2 guinea pigs. And, there's a lot to tell you about.
Wow, look at that. A Tootsie and Snickerdoodle guinea pigs.
Yeah.
You know, I have to tell you a quick story. My son, Pete, had gotten a guinea pig once at one of the pet stores in towns years ago. And he wasn't living with us. He had his own apartment at that point. He called up, and he's kind of going, oh, my God. And he's kind of flipping out. He left for work. There was a guinea pig. He came back, and there were 2 guinea pigs.
The one had, or maybe three.
There was the one he had was pregnant, and so and it was just over. And you know, one guinea pig is kind of a pet. Multiple guinea pigs, they start to make a lot of noise. So somehow
this reminds me of a Star Trek episode, The Tribbles.
Yeah, me too. Because those Tribbles wound up back at Tom's house for a while, and then Pete got the pet store to take them back because he only wanted to buy one. And you know, it's just take them back and get them to somebody else, and he did.
Oh.
But anyway,
Tom, can I tell you about one more?
Sure.
I'm Tina. Tina, a beautiful hound. 9 years, 3 months old. Look at those eyes, Tom. She's saying, please take me home. I will love you forever. She only weighs 44 pounds. She's, you know, a small to medium-sized pound.
Good-looking dog.
A heart of gold.
What a beauty.
And Tina would love to meet you today.
Yeah, look at that face. She's worth the trip. She is definitely worth
the
trip.
That's right. Just melt your heart. Let's get Tina her home today, Tom.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see what we can do. Mike, thank you for all you do, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you, Tom.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye. All right. So that was, there we go. That was interesting. Man, I'm glad we got some pets adopted last week. I have no great expectations that we have that kind of impact that, you know, there's somebody out there who says, gee, I'd like to get a pet today, but noontime they open. So that's good. All right, back to the topic at hand. So this product called Corian is like a rock. And what it is a blend of mineral and it's just an epoxy adhesive, which is turns out to be a thermoplastic. By that I mean when you heat it, it moves. So Dick started out making these in his kitchen oven, in two pieces to make a round banjo thing, and then I made an oven up here that would do it in one piece, and it was an interesting thing to do because I knew you could thermoform it. I'd seen videos. I talked to the guys at Bangor Laminate, who we had done a TV show with maybe 25 years ago. It's hard to believe it's been that long ago, and I kind of vaguely remember some. We weren't thermoforming stuff, but they were cutting, and we taped the show. And Norman, who was there 25 years ago, was still there. He's the guy I saw for the material. And they gave me a nice scrap piece that they had. And we actually could make 10 rims out of the scrap piece that we got. So I've been working on forms to put it in, and it's working out well. It's kind of fun because it just you put it in this oven and Dick has now made the same oven I have, and so between Maine and Connecticut we're knocking out these stupid banjo rims, and I'm putting them together into instruments. So they're multiplying in my basement. I think there's four or five in my basement right now. Number six is waiting to go together. Number six or seven. I just made one yesterday in my spare time. I was waiting for paint to dry or something. I said, oh, let me make a rim. So it's been kind of interesting. Now, where does all this go? Well, at some point in my checkered career, I had taken a job in New Jersey. I was living here in Maine, and I knocked around in the woods for a while, and I took a job in New Jersey. I was going to manage. They wanted me to be the manager of a hardwood mill, so they had me working in the mill itself while I was training, and it was a great job. People liked me. I liked them, but I was in New Jersey, and that was not going to work. So we hadn't sold our house. We moved back up here. I said, well, maybe the thing I should do, because I had access to this whole woodworking shop, this mill. I asked my boss, I said, do you mind maybe during lunch or breaks, maybe I can make some banjos? Because I had the delusion I would make banjos. And he said, sure, I'm not making this up, honest to God. You need to bring your own glue. Okay. I'll go buy some glue. And I did. And there was scrap wood all over the place. So that's what I was doing. And the guys who work at the shop thought it was hilarious that during breaks I'm actually doing more woodworking. But it was fun. Moved back to Maine, and I think I'm going to make banjos for a living, which never happened. And here I am now 40 years later, literally 40 years later. And we seem to be doing that. Now, you could knock me over with a feather, the fact that we're doing it, but I am woodworking because obviously I need the necks are still wooden, and the resonator on the back of the banjo is wooden, but there's also metal parts. And I'm scrambling now to get parts to put these things together. But they are going together, and they all... Now, here's the weird thing. You know, there's a whole art and science to musical instruments as to how they sound, how you make them sound right, what wood do you use, blah, blah, blah. It goes on and on. And the thing sounds good. It's a stone. It's a rock, basically, and it works. So I'm kind of... We're both kind of perplexed by how good these things sound, and I have an instrument dealer who sells instruments who is kind of encouraging me to make banjos that he can sell. I'm like, wait a minute, I make a living selling cars. So this has all been kind of strange. And over the past 2 months, Dick is just to get to work with him is fantastic, just because of what he can do, and can take something that seems like it didn't come out right. First two I made weren't quite right, and he doctored them into something usable. The one I did yesterday was the third that I've actually produced, and that one came out decent. And so I'm not sure where it's going to go, but and it's kind of an interesting product. And I came across somebody who did a house on some house program where they did all I know was TV show Million Dollar Listings in California, which is, you know, just a weird glimpse of a whole different culture. But this guy had done a house over, and he used a lot of Corian, because you can work it like wood, even though it feels like stone, and it basically weighs the same as stone. But he did a whole bunch of stuff in the house with it. I thought maybe it had gone by, but it hadn't. Anyway, let's go over to the phones on line one. We got a phone call. If I hit that button, there we go. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Morning, Tom. Hi. I was just wondering, I bought my first pellet stove this year.
Yeah.
And I know this might sound kind of crazy, but I was wondering if the ash that comes out of the pellet stove is like a forever chemical that you put on your, that you wouldn't want to put on your garden or anything because of the glue they use in it or whatever.
No.
But have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, there's no wood pellets. I don't believe they use any kind of binder. It's just heat and pressure and the natural lignins in the wood. So you can put the wood ash from a pellet stove on your garden and not have a concern. The one ash that is a problem is a coal ash, which is got a lot of nasties in it, just because it's more concentrated material, I guess. But I know Dick and I had talked about this years ago that it's considered a special waste. But so it's the kind of thing you want to dispose of in the trash as opposed to putting that on the garden. Now, having said that, for years people would put coal ash on driveways and stuff. And, you know, I think most of us are still okay. But for a garden, wood ash, pellet ash is fine.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Have a great day.
You too.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Yeah, it's, it's interesting to me that the price of pellets has gone up as much as it has over the past couple of years. It's still competitive price-wise. Matter of fact, I have it up here on the old computer. The prices really haven't changed much. The wood pellets are at $23 per million BTUs. That's at $385 a ton, which seems high to me. I know they've been a lot less than that, but that's where they are now. And the only fuels that are less would be firewood at $350 a cord. Natural gas generally is under that. Heat pumps are in the same ballpark as pellets. And heating oil. Heating oil, I think, is probably similar right now to pellets and heat pumps. On the governor's page, they're showing the cost of oil at around $3.90 a gallon on average. And I think it's dropped down significantly. It's more in the $3.40 range, so that's come down a ways. So that's good. Let's see. We got to take a break. It is 8:54 already. When we come back, let me just look real quick. No messages. So we will we'll take a break here. We come back. We'll take more calls. Second hour. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. The text is 601-207-4478. I can't look at numbers and repeat the numbers. What's that? Is that okay? Is that allowed? I don't know. Anything else? No. I guess we just have to hit the tune.
When you're
smiling, we'll be back in a
minute. When you're smiling,
and the whole world smiles with you.
And when you're laughing,
when the sun comes shining through.
When you're crying,
you bring on the rain.
Stop your sighing.
Won't you be happy again?
When you're smiling,
keep on smiling,
and the world will smile.
Hour number two has begun. It's hot and cold. Good morning again. I'm Tom. Hey, before I forget, I want to tell you about our friends at General Appliance over in Brewer on Center Street, open 9 to 4 Monday through Friday. If you're looking for appliance parts or service, they're the people to see. And the easy thing to do is just pick up the phone and give them a call. It makes you want to yow. 989-4341. 989-4341. If you're looking for appliance parts service, refurbished appliances. I could say that word, refurbished. Refurbished appliances, new appliances, they got them. That's all you got to know. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Our text line, 601-207-4478. Looks like we got a phone call. Let's see if that's working. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Morning, Tom. This is a question for Mike Dow or your wife. Recently, my cat was monitoring a little mouse in the kitchen, and then it went under the stove, and I went to bed. When I got up in the morning, the little mouse had drowned itself in the cat's water bowl, which was a 6-inch stainless steel, you know, little bowl, and there it was, dead in the water bowl. So all this time, I've been trying to call you and find out, how do you sterilize a stainless
I don't think you. I think you just wash it. I don't think you have to be too worried about that. If you're really freaked out about it, maybe some disinfectant like Lysol. But I think just washing it with soap and hot water is going to be fine. you know, my wife would know that, wouldn't she? I was thinking, why are you asking me about mice with and my we. We've not had a lot of experience with mice, but it has happened, and we just will go ahead and clean it. It's not that big a deal. So I hope that helps. Our phone number, 1-800-966-1039, text 601-207-4478. So to start the morning off every day, usually I'm up first. Not always, but and I'm kind of surprised. And Sunday morning, usually I can hang back. Rest of the morning, I've got things to do. And Saturday morning, I'm bouncing out of bed, looking at the clock every hour. And so I'm bouncing out of bed. So I got up, and first thing I do is I get a bowl of cereal, and then we have a Keurig machine that I use for hot water because I first have a cup of tea. Years ago, this just maybe tells you something about what's wrong with me. Maybe not, but I used to drink coffee. And I got the flu, and the thought of coffee was just, no, I don't want coffee. So I started drinking tea. And at some point, it evolved devolved, I'm not sure which would be the right term here. The first thing in the morning, I have a half cup of tea. It's a strong cup of tea. It's not a lot of water, but the regular amount of tea. So it's a strong cup of tea. I take some vitamins with it, have the cereal, and then I make a cup of coffee. So we got the Keurig machine, right? So what I do is I just use the Keurig for hot water for the tea. So I did that this morning, and I go and have my tea, and I said, uh-oh. My wife had made, she has some kind of cinnamon coffee thing in a pod, and we usually use we do have pod, the Keurig pods, but we also have the little thing that you can fill up with just ground coffee, put that in. And generally we make two cups in the morning, and one would be grounds and maybe one with a pod. Well, she made one yesterday, probably at noontime, with a pod and left the pod in the machine. I came in this morning to make my cup of tea, and there was that pod in the machine. And I've done this before. I don't check the machine because sometimes I remember to check. Sometimes I remember to take the pod out after we've made a cup of coffee. But I have to tell you, I've done it several times now where I make coffee tea. and it's not good. Coffee and tea mixed together is not a breakfast drink of champions. It's not something to get you started in the morning. Coffee is coffee. Tea is tea. It's kind of like... there's certain things that shouldn't go together. It's like pineapple on pizza. That is a sin, and you shouldn't do that. That's a bad thing. Coffee and tea together, same thing. But this one had cinnamon in it too. So, oh gosh, I don't know. So let's see. We're gonna try this on. Gonna try both lines and see. Well, I gotta hit the tune machine to see if this is gonna work. And it might not, but we'll find out in a second. This is an experiment, is what it is. Science. Stay with us. Okay, so now we're going to, this is not the experiment part. That's just the intro music for the person who is on line three. That might work. Are you there, sir?
Am I here?
Yeah. Hey, it worked.
Oh, my goodness.
How about that? Line three is back, and Pete's back. Wow. Good morning, Pete.
You know what my problem with whales is? Here's the thing, is like, I'm not a water guy because I can't breathe underwater. There's lots of stuff underwater that, like, you don't even know what it is. But here's the thing, is like, whales come right up to boats, right? And I've seen, yeah, everybody's seen the footage of a whale right next to the boat, and everybody's like, oh, how beautiful, it's magical, look at it splash, splashy splash, and they try to pet it,
yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah.
And that whale, if a thought passes through its head, could flip that boat over and eat everyone.
Yeah.
And
whales just don't eat people.
Yeah, but they hippos, well, they don't either, but
okay,
they still kill them.
Yeah,
so my concern is that, and I'm like, I'm very, very uncomfortable with that. So my knee-jerk reaction, this is just who I am as a person, is we need to kill them all because they're bigger than us and they could do that at any given time, and I don't like it. It makes me uncomfortable. What makes me more uncomfortable is the idea that maybe the whales know I think that.
Well, yeah. Well, here's
like
the thing.
Maybe they can, because they have whale song, and I saw a Star Trek movie about that.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I'm worried that, you know, maybe they can, like, pick up on human brainwaves. And if I'm on the boat, that one eye is going to look at me, and then it's going to roll over white, and he's going to hit the boat, and he's going to eat me.
Okay. So we're going to, for Pete's birthday is in June, everybody. So I think we need to get him a whale watching ticket.
I am not going. I seriously would not go.
Oh. But you can put a life jacket on. You know,
the crack could be like bobbing around, like, and then it could just whack me with its tail a couple of times.
Drag you down
into the Atlantic Ocean.
Well, we're going to fix that, Pete, that's for sure.
Yeah. Not comfortable with the idea.
Okay.
I'm not comfortable with anything like that. I think ecosystems would heal themselves, so I don't think it would be that big a deal to get rid of, like, whales. Ants are another one. Bears. Anything that's a direct threat to us. Let's embrace who we are as a species and really, you know, put our foot down.
Okay. All right, Pete. Well, that's interesting. You should have like an editorial segment here. Well, I guess that was it, huh? Boy. Well, look, now you called at an odd time, so we have to take a break.
Thank you.
So if you stand by, we'll actually, I do have a statement from a former president of the United States that I think you would find important, enlightening, and something that's socially relevant. And here he is, Dwight D. Eisenhower, making a comment.
Objection to the twist as such, but it does represent some kind of change in our standards. What has happened to our concepts of beauty and decency and morality?
If you don't do it, you're just considered out. I don't know of anyone that doesn't do it at the moment.
Well, they got a new dance and it goes like this. Yeah, the name of the dance is the Peppermint Twist.
Pete's back. Hour number two, and two and one third. You still?
You
there?
If you think I'm gonna be on the air with a show that plays the Peppermint Twist,
Joe Pesci played drums with Joey D and the Starlighters. So don't give me any crap about the peppermint twist, man.
Joe Pesci, does Joe Pesci still play drums for Joey D and the Starlighters?
He might. I don't know.
No, he didn't.
It was just his birthday.
He had a moral responsibility to walk away from that band.
You're going to make trouble on the week of Joe Pesci's birthday? It was his birthday this week. Don't give me no trouble.
81 years old.
81. God bless him. Okay. That's all I got. My cousin Vinny.
Did you talk about the car accident?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. And So,
pro tip, if you don't have your seatbelt on, those airbags aren't coming out. That's almost every car manufacturer.
Well, it's not every car manufacturer, but it's a lot of them. And somebody sent a snarky message, there's a reason not to buy a Prius. No, it's a reason to wear your friggin' seatbelt.
That Prius, the front of that was squished in pretty good, yeah. And that driver's compartment was relatively okay.
Yeah.
If he'd been wearing a seatbelt, he would have been fine.
Yeah.
So that's a testament to the crash safety ratings of that steel cage they've got around the compartment there. I was impressed. I mean, with a seatbelt, he probably would have been able to maybe not kick his door open, but you know what I mean.
Unfortunately, people like me every so often need a reminder that you need to wear your seatbelt. You know, part of it for me is I'm only going 2 miles.
The accident doesn't care how far you're going.
No. And anyway, I'm glad he's okay, and I have a feeling he'll be wearing his seatbelt if he's driving again.
Number one, my car won't shut up if I'm not wearing my seatbelt, and I go about 10 miles per hour. But I actually feel somewhat uncomfortable not wearing it at this point.
I honestly don't mind not wearing it, but in certain circumstances, I mean, like in the morning, like today, I go outside, it's all slippery. First thing I do is put on a seatbelt because I don't know what the road conditions are going to be. And fortunately, I've never had any issues on Saturday mornings, and I've been in some pretty nasty weather, but seatbelt goes on. I'm very aware of that. It's usually when I'm going like a mile or two down the road, I'm going to Tozier's, which is kind of where he was. And it wasn't. Yeah. Anyway, you got to just be careful. It's just not worth the risk.
Go ahead. I was just going to change the topic.
No, it's okay. Go ahead. Change it.
Earlier this week or last week, I mentioned the World of Concrete Expo.
Okay.
And everybody got a big kick out of that I was looking at the coverage from the World of Concrete Expo, but they debut a lot of neat tools there.
Mm.
Like they have this great wheelbarrow with these rotating handles so when you dump it, you just, you know, they spin as you tip it up.
Yep.
This is not going to help my case of being excited about the World of Concrete Expo, but I was driving through Searsport and I noticed this, and I hadn't noticed it before. They've been, you know, as they've been going through and doing the drainage stuff, they've been putting new electrical poles up, right?
Yeah.
And I noticed the line work on those poles.
Yeah.
You could set your watch by it. It is some high and tight with skin on the sides. That is some clean line work.
It looks good. You know, the technology keeps improving. I've noticed that too. It looks really very precise when you,
The old poles are still kind of sistered up to the new ones, but if you look at the new ones as you're going through Searsport, those power lines up at the top,
looks like
train and tracks.
There's not, you know, the ones they're replacing really aren't that old, but this stuff does get better. I mean, we do.
They are going to a taller pole now too, which is good,
I guess.
I still say cut all the trees back. Cut all the trees, kill all the whales, and buy a Prius.
I mean, that all fit really well together. There goes all the Prius customers right out. We're selling trucks.
I know it's not practical to kill all the whales, but just as we encounter them.
Just the bad ones.
The bad ones. Think about how much better our chapstick would be if we went back to whale oil.
Okay. All right. Hey, I just want to make the comment here.
With the exception of the sperm whale, because I feel like that's what a whale should look like all the old pictures from Moby Dick and stuff.
Okay.
That's a aesthetically pleasing whale. That one can stick around.
How much time do you spend thinking about whales? I'm getting a little concerned here as your parent.
Hey, anytime I get quiet, that's just what's going through my head.
Oh, God. So in a moment of pride, I mean, I'm going to congratulate myself in the fact that the white brick that took up residence in the middle of our shop For how long? A year and a half?
No, it was definitely, it was at least its second winter.
It's gone.
It's not gone. It's over at our other mechanic shop, being a brick there.
Well, yeah, but he's going to be able to figure it out, because I got it like 90% running. It just isn't quite there, and it's something I'm missing. And he is a diagnostician, in the sense he will chase down a single wire and find what wire is not hooked up yet, and sort it out. And so it made sense to get it to him. It probably should have gotten to him about a year ago, but there were other things going on at the time where it just wasn't prudent. But it is now, and it's gone. So it ain't coming back till it's running. Hopefully.
Well, we'll have to find some other dilapidated car to put there.
No, I love having all that extra floor space.
I was going to say, you'll find some piece of machinery that doesn't work quite right to fill that spot with, but that's actually what you're going to do today after the show.
No, that's not coming to the shop. I'm picking up a heat pump. It's going up to my house. Now, the old heat pump might come back to the shop, but it's smaller than a car.
It's all relative. It's all relative.
It's smaller than a car. So
That's what I have to contend with. His logic is, well, it's smaller than a car, so let's bring it in.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a water tank in the shop, too. I think that's got to be taken apart, and we'll file that away somewhere. And then we're making great progress. And I don't think you noticed it, but last week the oil burner started acting up in the shop. Did you know?
I noticed it. It sounded like it was running at a higher pitch.
Yeah, it's
the PSI was up. Is the PSI supposed to be up at like 75 plus?
Yes.
Okay. Well, should it be on right now?
If you have it, yeah.
Because I was going to say I turned it on just to maintain the
keep the floor kind of warm.
I did notice it sounded a little different.
Yeah. Well, I found that it needs attention about once every 6 months, so maybe two times a heating season, beginning and end, or somewhere there. It just kind of and I'm not an oil burner guy, but I mess around with them. I probably shouldn't, but usually when it's acting up and it kicks out, I'll open it. It's on a door that swings out, and I have a flexible hose for the oil line, a flexible oil line, so I can just swing the door open. And every time it's been an issue, there's always buildup of carbon on the electrodes. So I just clean the electrodes and put it back in service, and off she goes and runs like a top. And every so often I do change the nozzle. And I do have a new filter to put on, but I'm not going to put that on to the end of the season. I've got a spin-on filter as opposed to what they call the Woolly Bully filter.
How much oil do we run through here? Maybe two tanks a year, like 500 gallons?
Not even that. We might run 250 to 300 gallons. We don't do a full tank a year. So now we don't heat it 24/7. We only have it running while we're there. But
just keeping it running during the business day, it does stay above freezing.
Yeah. I always shut it off around 2 in the afternoon anyway.
Yeah.
And I have access to some solar collectors I'm going to put up just to dump heat into the floor. So I think that will, let me see, probably that'll have the oil bill in terms of keeping this place above freezing.
Boy, oh boy, well, it looks slick.
Yeah.
Hey, we could put them on, you know what, why don't we put them on the north side, on the roof?
Yeah, that's not going to work.
Now I understand, but why don't we put a mirror up too?
Maybe we get a whale to hold the mirror while we're at it.
Well, I'm just thinking, because we've got a leak somewhere on the north side of the roof, so you just put the solar collectors up, problem solved.
Right. Okay, we got to take a break. It's 9:30. There was a movie this week I watched on TV, and the guy who sings this song always reminds me of you.
Oh, good.
Not that you look anything like him or you sound anything like him, but his philosophy is one that Pete embraces, I think. So
he's a smart guy.
He's a very smart guy. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll have more time with Pete.
The Lord above gave man an arm of iron so he could do his job and never shirk. The Lord above gave man an armor iron. But with a little bit of luck, with a little bit of luck, someone else will do the blinking work. With a little bit. For temptation, to see if man could turn away from sin. The Lord above made liquor for temptation, but with a little bit of luck, with a little bit of luck, when temptation comes, you'll give right in.
That's what you call banjo music right there, ladies and gentlemen. That is Bella Fleck, Tony Trischka, Allison Brown, and some other guy I don't know. Four banjos, no waiting, right there. Pete's on line one, or line three, excuse me. It doesn't get any better than that, right there. Huh, Pete?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
It feels good. It feels good to be back on this line and to be compared with the garbage man from My Fair Lady. I still remember his hat.
he
out. Why not the guy from Fiddler on the Roof?
Well, we'll do that one next week, okay?
Yeah. Tevye. All right, I like that song.
Well, I Alfred P. Doodlittle, the actor was Stanley Holloway, and he was just so cool in that movie, and he reminded me in many ways of a guy I used to work with in the woods. His name was Frank Whitehouse Anderson Jr. And Whitehouse Anderson Jr. There's some people out there who know that name. And he was a character. He looked like Stanley Holloway, the guy who played Alfred P. Doolittle. He did enjoy the fruit of John Barleycorn. And as a matter of fact, one of the most drunken episodes, I've had a couple, that I ever had was out at Frank Whitehouse Anderson Jr.'s camp on Upper Lead Mountain Pond, and it was a story that bears repeating someday. I'm not sure when, but it was a time. Let's put it at that. Leave it at that.
Yeah.
We got a call on line two. I'm going to hit line two and hopefully not disconnect you, Pete. Yep. There we go. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yeah.
Good morning, Thomas and Pete. How are you?
Good morning.
Good.
Glad to hear it. How many miles are on your Prius now, Tom?
464,000.
All right. How's it running?
It's running like a charm.
Glad to hear it. Well, my question is about buying vehicles. And when the cars that you buy to resell, do most of them come from the auction?
Yeah. Occasionally we'll get one that would be a trade-in, but or from a private individual, but I would say 95% come from the auctions.
Okay. And how do you collect background information about those cars that you buy? I assume you have a limited amount of time.
Well,
because it's an auction.
Yeah, we don't have any, really very little background initially. We see who's selling it, what dealer is selling it. There's certain dealers I don't buy cars from because I'll be honest, I don't trust them. If in fact they had a car that I really thought I wanted, I would be over it
top to bottom to make sure, and Pete or I many times will do that. In some ways, I prefer Pete do it just because I get kind of excited about certain cars, and Pete's a little bit more objective than I am.
So what do you mean go over top to bottom? If you're looking at an auction, how are you evaluating it?
We're looking at everything on the car. We're running it. You know, we can drive the cars. We're underneath them looking at them. We're checking the fluids. It depends on the vendor. We don't have titles ahead of time usually, so we can research them to some degree with the VIN number. But generally, we find out more about the car after we've purchased it, because there's usually a chain of custody in terms of paperwork. So we can see if it was one owner car, maybe a two owner car. After that, it becomes kind of fuzzy. That's the best we can do. And then, then we have, you know, I go through the cars, Pete goes through the cars, and then one of our mechanics or both of our mechanics will go through the car as well, depending on what we're dealing with, if we think there's any kind of issue.
As far as history goes, we don't generally get any sort of service records or anything with them.
You don't get any service records?
Not normally. Sometimes I have pulled Carfax at times. I don't usually use Carfax because it's expensive and it doesn't necessarily give you a lot of information. Sometimes it's a wealth of information. Other times it's like, this is stupid. I just spent $50 on this. So we will use
I've done it on a number of personal cars, and I've always felt robbed.
So we do use other VIN checkers if we need to, or we feel the need to. I have to say Carfax has been helpful at times, but it's not my usual go-to because it's kind of expensive for what it gives you.
Records in that regard don't carry a lot of weight because, like, if the car was in a fender bender in 2012, that really doesn't have any bearing on the car's condition today.
And it isn't always disclosed either.
Yeah.
So, say you're buying a Prius with 250,000 miles on it. You don't know if the CVT oil is original or if it's been changed, and that can be a big difference. You don't know if the engine is original or if the engine's been swapped. These are things that you just can't determine until you actually take ownership of the vehicle.
Right.
Well, the engine would be VIN numbered.
Yeah, and CVT oil is a little bit different on a Prius in that generically a CVT is usually a belt drive vehicle, and oil change for that is really critical. On a Prius, it's gear drive, so it still needs to have fluid in it, but if nobody changed that fluid in the transaxle, chances are there would be no damage the way there would be, say, if it was a Nissan, which most Nissans are CVTs. I avoid those cars. I just don't want to deal with them. I don't want to, and Hondas are the same way. And we've had a few, I remember one we got, we had gotten a Honda, I think that was a hybrid, wasn't it? It was a Civic, I think, hybrid. We got it had an exhaust problem, so it was really loud. And so we had the exhaust fixed, and I got in the car to drive it. We had the mechanic go through it, and when I put it in reverse, it's clicking. Well, it's clicking because the CVT has an issue. And I said, you know what, we're just going to blow this car out, just make it go away. And the car ran perfect, but it made that clicking noise that I said, I can't sell this car like a regular car because I don't trust it. And so we sold it as a inspected only, and it ran fine for it. We saw it around for a really long time. But those are the kind of things that I don't want to buy cars with the belt drive CVTs, which most cars are except for Toyotas. Toyota, if they have a CVT, it's going to be a planetary gear, and those just stand up very well.
Do you ever come across cars that you have the actual owner's records, maintenance records?
Oh, yeah. We'll have them. We'll get cars that have it might have come through a dealer that they have a Carfax with it, or there might be a Carfax from when the previous owner bought the car maybe 4 years ago. And, you know, we'll look at that. But Yeah, I would say a small percentage will have all the records. You know, a lot of people will keep the records right with the car, which is convenient. Generally, what we're looking at, though, because I go through all those if we have them, just to see what was done. And a lot of times it's just oil changes and tires, and we don't see much else that's been done to the car, because and probably brakes, but that's kind of it for a lot of these cars.
You ever buy a car that consumes much more oil than you think is appropriate, but you don't find out till you actually have the car in possession?
Not really.
Not unless it has a reputation for consuming oil.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, generally we don't see that on Toyota products. Some Toyotas are known for having leaky valve stem seals. I think the Tercels were one. Some of the Corollas, I think, did. But
second generation RAV4s that were the 2.4 liter, they also had problems with the piston rings being too small. They consumed oil.
And we avoid those cars. I don't want to have the problem, because I have to fix it. And B, I don't want to have a customer have it. That doesn't mean it doesn't happen that we might have a car that uses more oil than we want it to. But if we find it, we will remedy the situation if we can, or we'll disclose it, because it, you know, life's too short for to be fooling around with people's money. I started doing this late in life, and for my whole life I've been a car consumer, so I maybe recognize or feel a little more sensitive to that. I know Pete does, and I don't want to pass that on if we can avoid it. It's not perfect, but we do try.
Understood. You certainly convey that over the radio, and I do appreciate that about you guys. And thanks for all the information, and I hope you have a good weekend.
Okay, you too. Take care now. Bye-bye. Let me hit that
button.
How do I...
Line's still open. I can hear it.
I know. I can't.
Take your time.
Yeah. If I drop it, I'm going to drop you, Pete.
Don't drop me. Don't drop me.
I'm going to drop you. I'll tell you.
Am I still here?
Hang on.
I hear ringing.
Okay, you're still there. Okay, we got
Yo.
It. Hey, hum's gone
what
away.
What was the car? We had a car, and I think it was actually the Honda Insight, where it would throw a code, and it had to do with spiders building webs in it.
Oh, that was,
It was the Insight, right?
I don't remember what car it was, but we've run into that with the emissions, gas tank emission system. There's a little vent tube, and spiders get into that tube and just plug it up, and then the car throws a code.
Well, here's the thing. I found out about this during this week, and I made a note to bring it up. Apparently, there's a spider. It's called the yellow butt spider or something like that.
I'm going to look that up while you're talking.
It loves the smell of gasoline. So it'll go and it'll build webs in cars, specifically Mazdas. There's a certain, this is what set me off about it. There was a certain generation Mazda, like years and models, where they had to do, Mazda actually had to do a recall to remedy the issue because so many spiders were moving into the cars and they couldn't figure out what it was. And they found out it's this one particular type of spider. Like they did a computer patch and a physical fix and, you know, all trying to keep spiders out of the car.
Here it is right here. The culprit is the yellow sack spider, which makes the Mazda 6 model of Mazda cars its home, of course, because it's lured inside by the smell of the fuel. There's a whole bunch of stuff here about yellow sack spiders and gasoline.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Wow.
Because I remember we had some other car that had that issue.
It's happened several times.
It was an EVAP code or something like that, and it had to do with the gas tank.
Yeah, and it's repairable. You don't have to replace the line. You need to get the spiders. It's like, who let the dogs out? Who let the spiders in? Oh, my God.
Because I like Mazda's style-wise. I like the way they look. And so I'm always, anytime I see something about it, it catches my eye. And I'm also mildly arachnophobic. So, I think I'm all set on the Mazda. Thanks.
Okay.
Mazda,
the
2012 Mazda 6, anyway.
So here is.
But they did have a recall.
This is from a British magazine. Here's the headline: Can spiders really make your car explode? Mazda recalls 52,000 vehicles that might be at risk of arachnid invasion. Okay. Can a spider make a car unsafe? It can increase the pressure in the fuel tank, leading to possible leaks and buildups that could cause the car to catch fire or even explode.
I would say, how strong are these spider webs that they that they can maintain running? But there's actually, right outside my window, there's a single-strand spider web with a dead ladybug on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been there through all the windstorms and all winter.
Yeah.
And I keep looking at it thinking, I got to knock that down when I go out, and I always forget. And I just wind up staring at it while I'm on the phone talking about spiders.
Well, here's the thing about this whole, and not to freak anybody out, because that's kind of a sensational headline. The issue is, if there's a spider that's causing this, you're going to get a check engine light, and you should be getting that checked. I'm always in awe of people who drive with the check engine light on and never have it checked. Because
you can get a scanner for $19 at Walmart and check it yourself. It's got two buttons. You'll figure it out.
Yeah, you could just fuss with the thing, and eventually you'll get there. Or you can go to AutoZone. They'll scan it. If the check engine light's on, they'll scan it for free. I did have a customer. We've had several customers. I had one come in the other day who spent $210 having a car diagnosed, which ain't bad if you have a result, which he did in this case. But a lot of times they'll charge that $210 just to scan your car, which takes minutes, and it's good to have it. You need to have the information, but you can get it done for free, or you can buy yourself one hell of a nice scan tool for $210 and learn something about your car, which is, if you have a car or more than one, if you have more than one car, it behooves you to have one. Just drop the $20. Even if you hate the thing, you have it. If you need it, it's convenient to have, and it's good to know a little bit about your car. But it sounds like
I think it's good to know a lot about your car.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's the customer right there. You got to get that?
I'm going to look out.
Okay. Hey, real quick, for a couple of moments, what do we got for cars that you want to talk about?
Oh, what have I got? I've got a bunch of people coming in to look at cars today, so I'll talk about this one. We've got a 2017 Prius Prime Advanced Plug-in.
That's a nice car.
And that's got 82,000 miles on it. It's a 2017, it's showing 103 miles per gallon.
Yeah,
let me see, what else? We've got, we've got a bunch of just regular Priuses. We got parked right next to the Prius Prime. We got that nice Kia EV, the fully electric with the new battery, the Kia Soul.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then to the left of the Prius Prime, I got two RAV4s, one regular gas and one hybrid.
Yeah.
I got lots of nice stuff.
Yeah, you do. And
it's
got
all on the website at Prius.store.
Yeah. Okay. And you're going to be there all day. I will not be there because I have to go run around. So you know you're going to be busy.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I appreciate your help.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm usually there and we look at each other and could probably go to sleep, but today will be that day, and I think that's somebody trying to call you for that. Why don't I let you get that, Pete? We only got a couple minutes left.
Okay.
Okay. I'll turn
all
that
right
down.
Bye.
Okay, I'll see you later. Yeah, so there. There we go. We dropped Pete. We got time maybe for one more quick call here. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine. Hello? No? Okay. Let's see. What else we got? The phone is ringing like crazy here this morning. Let's check the messages. Okay. Couple of messages. Do you know of any places that clean fuel injectors? I don't. It's just one of those things I think you need to check with your local garage, see who does it. Usually if I think I have an injector issue, I'll put a can or two of seafoam gas treatment. Another one here, I bought a code reader in 2009. It still works great. Yeah, they don't wear out. I mean, I just bought an expensive code reader specifically for Toyota and Lexus cars, and it's really good. It does everything that pretty much everything that Techstream does, which is the Toyota specific software, which I also have. And I just upgraded. I haven't got the software upgrade yet, but I upgraded it for Ford trucks because I do have a Ford truck with a plow on it that I need to get into to check a few things. But it's just, and it's more of a tablet than a handheld, and it costs a lot more money. It cost about the same as that visit to the dealer, so it's not crazy money. But it's convenient, and it's good to have it. And I, specifically, we just deal with Toyota products. I do have handheld units that will get into everything else, but not necessary to be more elaborate except for now. Now that I've got this fancy machine, I want to go the next step. So we will do that. Anyway, we're out of time. It's going to be cool this week. I think we were going to see 18 inches of snow on Tuesday. Now I think we're going to see a dusting, which is okay. I accept that. Anyway, we'll see you all next week. Same time, same place. You take care. Drive careful. See you then.
Practicality, D doesn't interest me. Love the life that I lead. I've got a pocket full of miracles, and with a pocket full of miracles, one little miracle a day is all I need. T rubbles more or less, B or the me, I guess, when the sun doesn't shine. But there's that pocket full of miracles, and with a pocket full of miracles, the world's a bright and shiny apple that's mine.